We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, November 26th, creeping up on Thanksgiving edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D, and for the next 2 hours, we got you. Bringing you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we're about to present, in front of the whole free world, a very motivated football team. Saturday night in Death Valley, LSU, after everything last year with Texas A&M, I think it is going to be on. As Coach Ed Ogeron said, right after the Arkansas game ended this past Saturday night. And so with that in mind, Clint, you and I spent a decent amount of time yesterday. Our guest that came aboard, ditto. We all looked back at Arkansas for the most part, but I did start to lay out some reasons why this one, it just felt a little bit different. And I think it's the perfect scenario for LSU to have one of these types of games to end its regular season. Any other time that you're 11-0, you're prohibitive favorites in your finale against the capable team, but not a world beater, there might be concern for a letdown. But in this game, considering the stakes and considering what happened last year, I think they're going to have LSU's full attention. And here is, I think, the next Heisman Trophy winner in college football, Burbank Joe Burrow, on last year's game in College Station.
So we were playing really well in overtime. We were getting 2 point after 2 point, and then the last time we had the ball, we scored the touchdown, and then D ran a great route. We had him open, and the ball got tipped at the line, and so we didn't end up. We actually still completed, but he didn't get in the end zone for that 2 point play. So that one kind of run through my head a couple times if I could have waited a little longer and found the window. So that one came off the field mad because I kind of knew that they were rolling on offense. They were going to go down and score and possibly get the 2 points. So that one kind of runs through my head.
What about the stuff that you couldn't?
Yeah. And so what happened after the game? What happened with some of the calls that didn't go LSU's way? As you might expect, that wasn't on Joe's mind. He just thinks about, here are the plays that we didn't make that we could have. And this time around, how can it be different? And just think with me for a moment, because this is kind of, for me, the big, just, it was a helicopter that circled around and just landed, and I had my aha moment earlier today. When you think back to last year's A&M game and where LSU is now, and everybody likes to point, rightfully so, to the hit that Burrow took against UCF in the bowl game in the desert, from that point until now, he has been hands down the best player in all of college football. But if you really think about it, that A&M game, Burrow and that offense played pretty darn well. But from where they were, losing that game and having a season that could have been, what? I mean, 10 wins deep in the regular season, having it go from there and looking where the program is now, it's interesting when you take these 1 year removed kind of timeouts and you think exactly what all has transpired, what's happened, how much is different. It's pretty incredible. LSU last year at A&M played a whale of a ball game, came up on the short side, but we got some glimpses of what maybe could be for the offense, but we had no idea. I mean, the heights that it would climb to this year, because after all, this time a year ago, Joe Brady was still a member of the New Orleans Saints coaching staff. This time a year ago, he was in the midst of a Falcons-Saints home game in New Orleans week. And this time a year ago, so many things were different with LSU's football team. And now you fast forward to Thanksgiving week of 2019. There's an opportunity to go 12-0, only the second time in modern program history, right? LSU did it in 2011. They've got a chance to do it in 2019. Of course, that season, the Tigers ran it all the way to 13-0 and ran into a buzzsaw in New Orleans. This time around, it looks like they'll get the same exact team in Atlanta, Georgia, an opportunity to go 13-0 if they can hold serve against A&M first. But then I don't think they're going to run into Alabama. Then I think, well, not only is it different because there's a college football playoff and it's four instead of two, then I think LSU is going to get to try their hand against some really interesting and somewhat new competition. Clemson, Ohio State, maybe even Oklahoma. Those three, usually along with Bama, have been regulars. I mean, they have reservations that have been booked virtually since we began these college football playoffs. LSU is the newcomer to that table, but not a newcomer to the front of the line in college football. We can think of 03, 07, 11. They basically tasted royalty, as we alluded to, but now all of a sudden they're right back there. And this A&M game, I've said it a few times already this week. I'll continue to say it. LSU is going to be focused on this ball game. There is no chance of a letdown. There's no chance of being unsharp mentally, not being focused. The only thing that there is a chance of is being too amped up and getting going a little bit too fast and letting your emotions maybe get the better of you. Those are the types of demons that LSU could potentially deal with in this ball game Saturday night, senior night, inside of Tiger Stadium. But having anything less than full motivation, nope, that's not a concern I think anybody has to worry about. So this one should be an awful lot of fun. We gave you a little bit of Joe Burrow earlier in this segment. How about some Ja'Marr Chase as we go toward our way out? And I want to play this in particular, because today a big day for Chase. He was named a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award. We know that LSU's had one of those before. In fact, one of our area's own, Josh Reed, former Rain Wolf, turned that trick earlier this millennium. And here is Ja'Marr Chase all about executing on offense.
I know they play a couple of palms at the boundary. They play palms at the boundary side. You know, they might bring the corner down, blitz them a few times just to stop the run. So just all about executing our offense, you know, picking the right people who we picking up our matchups against, you know, and just executing it.
Of course, on the fun side of things, Clint, he also talked about toning down the dancing. This is a pretty cool story that I'll set up just briefly. Our guy Cody Warsham, digital media reporter for LSU Sports, suggested during the week, and he posted the video on Twitter, that the next time either Jefferson or Chase scores a touchdown, they should do the mop dance. Well, naturally, they actually did the mop dance, and they were flagged. So in reality, this was Cody Warsham's fault, but Ja'Marr Chase, being the stand-up dude that he is, he'll take credit for it. He'll atone.
I don't think the dance is never going to be over, to be honest. So, I mean, I don't know. The refs didn't like us that game, so we just had to calm it down just a little bit.
Okay, maybe he atoned at least a little bit. We got a big show today. Only 2 hours, so you know we've got to max it out. At 4:30, our man Eric Mouton. He's the athletics director and boys basketball coach at Ascension Episcopal. He's coming aboard to talk a lot of different things on the hardwood, including the start to the season for the Raging Cajuns. And right now with Bob Marlin, 400 career Division I victories and counting. We'll talk with Eric Mouton about all of those things basketball related. At 5:05, you get your weekly fix. Shea Dixon, go247.com. Big name recruits coming to Tiger Stadium on Saturday night for the A&M game. He'll tell you who, why they're important, and then we'll get to the biggest reasons and motivators for LSU in this ball game. And finally, we won't have a Thursday show this week, right? It's Thanksgiving. We'll be like you. We'll be taking it off and getting fat on turkey. And so one of our normal Thursday guests is going to end our show today at 5:45. LSU football sideline reporter Gordy Rush is going to join the program. Eric Mouton, Shea Dixon, Gordy Rush all on the menu. So after this brief timeout, we'll all sit down and feast. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you.
Well, Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Record-setting quarterback, running back, tight end, and wide receivers for Steve Hensminger, Joe Brady in this LSU offense, and as we've mentioned several times, in fact, a little fire in the belly for this game. That all leads us to just one question that we want to lob to you. So we continue getting ready for the LSU-Texas A&M game, and now we can really have some fun with numbers. I know, even if you're not a math guy or gal, I think you'll like this one. Exciting and new. Your sink or swim question of the day: where would you set the over-under for LSU points on Saturday? I don't need you to go to Vegas or your favorite Vegas-related website and give me the actual over-under for this football game. I could do that for you. It's 62. I just want to know, how many points do you think LSU will score? Call us up. Let us know. 706-0111-CD. A realistic over-under for LSU.
Over-under just for LSU, Ben. I think I'd set it at 40.5. I feel like that would be an appropriate over-under, because I wouldn't be surprised, because based on what we saw last weekend with Texas A&M holding the Georgia Bulldogs down to 19 points, I think this could wind up having a chance to be a low-scoring game. But at the same time, you got to kind of set it at where the LSU Tigers' average has landed, around 40 points a game. I think that's a fair way to go about it.
I'll tell you what, I think you just beautiful-minded into one hell of an answer. I'm going to tell you why. You're more prophetic, not pathetic, but you're prophetic, more so than maybe you know. The over-under, as I mentioned, is 62. And so that tells you Vegas, with a 17-point spread, more or less thinks that this game's going to be about 40-23, right? That would be a push on the spread and darn near just split like a dart in the middle of a bullseye, the over-under for this one. 40-23. So for a number of reasons, your pick of 40 is good, but it's not where I would go. And I don't agree with the line that Vegas has set here. I don't think it's taken into account some of the extracurricular. I would set a realistic LSU over-under for this game, I think, at 51.5. I really believe that too. At that point, we're talking about 7 touchdowns and 1 field goal. Do they make it there to 52? I see no reason to consider that unattainable. And we're not talking about a 7-OT game. We're talking about 60 minutes of regulation. I don't believe this one's going to require OT. And LSU's biggest muscle to flex all season long has been this offense. All those record-setting players that I alluded to, led by Joe Burrow, I think that their offense is the big, bad bully on the block that's going to deliver this message. Now, LSU fans are probably hoping that the defense will continue to improve from the Ole Miss outing a few weeks ago, that special teams will round into form prior to the SEC title game. But I think that if there is a message to be sent in this game, it's LSU's offense that is the most capable of sending it. For that reason, I would set mine, amigo, up there at about 51.5. That's the over-under I would set. And I'm curious who out there would take the under and not be sweating bullets by about 8:45 or 9 p.m. on Saturday night. All right, don't be shy on this Tuesday. I know you got your kids. They're out of school. You can still call us up. Heck, we have Gus Kattengill on every Monday. We can hear his kid in the background every week. It's okay. We'll take your kids in the background. But call us up and let us know what you think. Where would you set this over-under? Or if you want to slice this another way, just call me and tell me how many points you think LSU is going to score in this ball game. 706-0111. While we wait on that, a little bit more LSU sound that I want to get to you. Let's go Joe Burrow and his thoughts on this Texas A&M Aggies defense and where perhaps the Aggies, who played well against Georgia on the road, might present challenges.
They have some good players up front. 52 is a really, really good player. He's got twitch. He's strong. And their defensive coordinator does a great job of mixing up the looks for me. They have a really good blitz package on third down, and then they'll go to it on second and longs as well. So I'm going to have to be keyed in to reading my keys pre-snap to try to get these blitzes picked up. They do a really good job, that coaching staff. They're good coaches.
And they're more known for the offense. I think we all realize that. If you're led by Jimbo Fisher, typically you get it done with your offense. But I'm more curious what you think about LSU's offense in this game and just how bloody it may possibly get. I've got one text into the program saying LSU drops 80 by the Ponderosa. That might be a touch high. I don't know if it's all that high, but it might be a touch high. I'm telling you, this won't be the normal game where you try to get up big and then call off the dogs. I don't think anybody that remembers last year believes that the Tigers are going to call off the dogs anytime before they really have to and before this one could maybe injure somebody because they stay in a little bit too long. Got another text into the program. Damian says LSU 50, A&M 17. And so he's flirting with that 51.5 number that I've set. Vegas, in my opinion, has this one wrong. They've got the total over-under at 62 points. If that is really in danger, it means LSU's defense has played a pretty darn good game. That's what I'll tell you. If 62 is the number and it ends up under, it means that we've seen a good defensive effort from Dave Aranda's group, because I really think you're going to see LSU on its own break the half-century mark. How much higher can this offense fly? That's the question that we're debating right now. Again, the number to play, 706-0111. And waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline is Little Johnny. Little Johnny, are we talking over-under, or is this a Will Wade shout-out?
Well, I was going to get to that, Ben, but listen, I think they're going to score as many as they can. If everybody remembers correctly, Louisiana football royalty got assaulted on the field in Texas A&M last year. You may as well go to England and slap the queen if you're going to come to an LSU football game and punch Kevin Falk. It's out of line. They deserve to be taken behind the woodshed. I hope they score 100 on them. And I hope the defense shows up and shows a shutout. We're going to see what they made of, because they really need to look good going into the SEC championship game. And I'm glad to see that nobody took the advice and Will Wade is still living happily and healthy here in Baton Rouge. Later.
And he's got a good basketball team. No question. I like the Little Johnny shout out toward Kevin Falk there. You assault LSU royalty, you might as well go to England and punk the queen. And yeah, things got awfully hairy. I think we all remember very well, right? February, March, April, with Will Wade and the LSU basketball program. I know, my man Little Johnny hadn't forgotten. I haven't either. I own up to just about everything that's happened there. I think there's a lot that's still going to happen in the world of college basketball. But right now, the man is leading LSU hoops. He's got a good team, and they were a second-half collapse. I think we all recognize against VCU at this point from looking really, really good and still being in the top 25. I think this team's best basketball could still be ahead of them. All right, we'll take another call. Let's get back to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dusty is with us. All right, Dusty, where's your over-under for LSU points Saturday?
Brother Love, I give it to about 35 to 42 points for LSU. I think it's going to be more of a dogfight than laying 80. Poor, but I would hope so. And I have a prediction that I'm going to be drinking a whole lot of Thanksgiving leftover turkey, wild turkey. One team, one heartbeat, brother.
There it is. It's a wild turkey shout-out. A little Thanksgiving wild turkey. And that's the way you do it on a week like this. Our thanks to Little Johnny and Dusty for making the program better and bringing this into the fray. If LSU scores 40 or below in this game, I will be mildly disappointed. I don't have bones on it. That's not why. I just think they're geared a little differently because of the way that last year went down. Now, maybe some respect needs to be given, or at least more respect on my part, for the Aggies' defense. But I'm not going to do it. I could do that, but I won't. I think LSU is out for blood in this one. I think they're going to get it. I've got them going over the half-century mark, and that's why I will continue to set my personal over-under for just LSU's side of the ledger at 51.5. I'm wondering if they can't creep up on that type of a crooked number. So we're having a little fun. I told you we could have fun with math. We did so. We'll do more of that during the show today. In fact, a guy that used to put up some digits playing for the STM Cougars and then for the then USL Raging Cajuns, Eric Mouton, going to be with us on the other side of this break. He's now doing a great job as a color commentator for Bob Marlin's UL Raging Cajuns. We got that, some high school hoops as well. You don't want to miss Dr. Fundamentals. That's a sweet nickname. Eric Mouton on the other side of this break. We've got Shea Dixon at 5:05 flipping the script, talking LSU Cruton, and then Gordy Rush with a sideline view of Tigers football. We've also got a little Raging Cajuns on the docket, and I've got some shade. It's optimal to throw on a Tuesday, and so I will in our 5 o'clock hour. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, you've got all that. More Bumper to Bumper Sports on the way.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in and pretty excited to be kicking it with one of our favorites. We're not going to leave him hanging. Let's get out there right now. So the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, he is the AD and boys basketball coach of the one and only Blue Gators of Ascension Episcopal, Eric Mouton, joining the program. How are you, Coach?
Good, Ben. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
So let me get this straight. Are you to the level of multitasking that you're doing a live radio interview on Acadiana Sports Station and hosting a basketball camp?
The basketball camp ended. We go 9 to 12:30, and then I start my Blue Gator Invitational at 3 o'clock. So we got that going on right now. But at 2 o'clock, to get my JV guys some work, we play a JV game at 2 o'clock before my tournament starts at 3, and we play at 3, 4:30, 6, and 7:30 tonight and tomorrow. So a little bit going on.
Just the beast. All right, we're going to get back to that momentarily, but let's talk about your alma mater, those Raging Cajuns. Off to a good start with the new cast of characters. Yeah, they got some talent that comes back, Cedric Russell, I think most notably, but a couple of Baton Rouge area kids that I spent a lot of time covering as they were coming up. And now I'm watching Kobe Julian play. I'm watching the kid from U High play and starting to really look good. So a few guys that had to sit out via transfer and injury starting to make an impact.
Yeah, they certainly are. And those two kids, like you mentioned, from Baton Rouge can definitely play. They're starting to really come into their own. They're starting to learn how the game is played at that level. And then they put in a couple of pieces around them. You know, Malik Wilson's a very good, talented freshman that can handle the ball a little bit and get Russell off the ball and let Russell catch and shoot, which I think he's probably one of the best shooters in the Sun Belt when he doesn't have to handle the ball so much and kind of get worn down at point guard running things. Then you got Big Duguay inside. Smith's healthy now. So, you know, they had a big win this week, and I think they're about to start playing some really good basketball as we head into the holiday season and then on into conference play.
Coach, the biggest area where Bob Marlin's group has to come together and improve from what you've seen so far?
Well, I just think they need to learn how to play together. You know, it doesn't just happen overnight. You know, you can't teach experience and you can't teach comfort levels with certain kids. They just have to get out on the court and play. And practicing is one thing. Yeah, you can go over everything. You can play a little five-on-five, but it's not crunch time. You know, it's not tough physical Division I college basketball games when really all you have at that time is the five guys you're on the court with. So the more comfortable you get with playing someone, you learn their tendencies, you learn some of the things about them, about how they react to certain situations. The more they play together, I think once that chemistry and that gel, and that's what Coach Marlin normally does, is get all these kids to forget about individual accolades and play for the team. And I think that's going to happen pretty soon here with this group. And I think we're starting to see it already as their comfort level with playing against each other and then all the pieces, who's coming off the bench, who's doing what when they come in. All of that, I think, is going to be sorted out by the time conference starts.
Talking with our man Eric Mouton on 103.7 The Game. All right, a little bit more detail on what you've got coming up tomorrow and how some of the locals can get involved with some great high school basketball.
Yeah, we've got the Blue Gator Invitational going on right now. We just had our first game done, the 3 o'clock game. Catholic High just beat Generette, and now Erath is about to play Delcom at 4:30. That's the second game of the loser's bracket. And then at 6 o'clock tonight will be the first semifinal game, Central Catholic of Morgan City, who won yesterday. They actually beat Generette. And then the ESA Falcons, our Episcopal brothers right down the road, ESA, who beat Catholic High yesterday. They're going to play in the first semifinal game at 6 o'clock tonight. And then the Blue Gators beat Erath last night, and we'll be playing Homa Christian tonight at 7:30 in the other semifinal game. And then tomorrow we'll play four games again, starting at 3 o'clock with the third-place game at 6, and then the championship game. Hopefully the Blue Gators will be in that championship game tomorrow at 7:30. But we're out here at Youngsville at our Sugar Mill Pond campus, and we've got some high school basketball going on starting at 3 o'clock tomorrow.
All right, you're versatile, brother, so I can ask you about a bevy of topics. And you and I spoke on this when the Blue Gators football program came to Pete's for the Prep Power Hour. I know that you're not a fan of the split, some of the things it does to dilute competition. And while I'm okay with not having games in the Superdome for football just for a limited time, I'm not really wild about the fact that we're 2.5 weeks out and nobody knows where these select football championships are going to be played. I got to get your 2 cents on that.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's good for anybody. It's just, you know, there's too much up in the air. There's too much left in the hands of the coaches and principals and and ADs. You know, you're right. Right now, you can ask, you know, any of the local teams that are still in it on the select side on where they're going to be playing, and it's just too much up in the air with who wins, and you have to agree on where you're going to play. Is UL available? You know, is Cajun Field available? If it's a Baton Rouge team, will they want to play over there? I think it's going to end up being, you know, St. Thomas More may play at their place. LCA may be at Cajun Field. I think it's just too much up in the air and too much left in the hands of the schools. And again, it's what the principals voted on in January, and now we're just trying to sort all this out. And it's going to be the same thing with basketball on where the top 28s are going to take place, if they even take place.
Okay, now I'm really curious. What does "if they take place" mean?
I mean, if you top 28 is if you play at somebody's school, the home team hosts, then there's no top 28.
Now
it's a home game for the higher seed. Yeah.
Now I got you. Yeah. Okay. All right. So still getting through the semis and the finals, just not all in one consolidated place. Now I'm with you.
Right. It's just too much up in the air, Ben. I think it's just, you know, it's a mess, and I'm not sure how it's going to be sorted out.
All right, coming down the stretch with Eric Mouton. Again, you and I can go a lot of places. An interesting game in New Orleans tonight as Anthony Davis, LeBron James come to town. You think that one's going to be pretty wild?
I think it will be. I can't wait till everybody's healthy and everybody's, you know, back on the court. I think, you know, LeBron is kind of out on a mission this year. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's his 17th year, and he's kind of on the downward spiral of his career, and he's showing a lot of people that he's got a little basketball left in him, and it's going to be, with all of the free agency and how everything played out, it's going to be one interesting basketball season, and it's going to be real interesting once the playoffs roll around.
As always, it's great talking with you, Coach. Congratulations, what you've got with the Blue Gator Invitational, and keep doing your thing as part of the color commentary tandem for those Cajuns basketball games. We enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for having me on, and we'll start at 3 o'clock tomorrow if anybody wants to come watch a little high school basketball with four games. So thanks for having me.
There you have it. And what a great way that would be to spend the Wednesday afternoon and evening prior to Thanksgiving. If you don't have family in town, you should go. Maybe if you do have family in town, you should go. You know what I mean? I've got the in-laws coming in. I should go. And I think that I just got in a little bit of hot water right there. But you get what I'm saying. I didn't quite get what Coach was saying for a second there. You probably could tell. So before we hit that break, Clint, I swear it was like the man telling me that Christmas was canceled. He's like, there will not be a top 28 this year.
That was just I was kind of in the same boat. I was like, wait a minute, what is he talking about? Then it's like, you had to kind of like that. I was more concerned about the pause after because it was like, did we just lose Coach Butzel?
Dude, are you telling me that you're not going to allow these teams to play the semis and finals? Coach, don't do that to me. It's still real to me, damn it. I want it back, and I need it every year. I need high school basketball championships. He just meant they wouldn't be in the same place. So I can breathe a little bit easier there. That's something I need in my life for Marsh Madness, and I'm glad that it will be intact, even if it's separate in terms of its locales. We all got through that one okay. We're going to hit one final break in this hour. We'll get through that all right as well, and then we'll start taking more of your phone calls. I want to get back to the LSU A&M game, and then we'll see if we got some time, play a little bit of Billy Napier sound from yesterday, and look forward to another rivalry game this weekend in South Louisiana. Cajuns hosting the Warhawks with a chance to go 10-2 on the regular season. After a brief timeout, that is how we're going to run it down. You'll have more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
They're good all the way across the board, and they're playing as good as anybody in America. So, you know, going down there, it'll be a tough environment. I mean, I've been there many times on the road and as a home team, so I know what it's like. They have great fans, great people, and a great team, and we got to put this one behind us really quickly and move on and get ready to play a tremendous LSU team on the road.
I forget sometimes what Jimbo Fisher sounds like. You heard yesterday our man Ruffin Rodriguez stopped in. He does that every Monday. He's got a way of doing that. And he recalled just how full of nervous energy and anxious that Jimbo was basically at every moment when he was on the LSU sideline. So I think our man's going to be more than just a little jumpy for this game coming up in Death Valley. Of course, I'm sure he's confident as always. That's just the name of that game, and it's just the beast of being a college football head coach.
Exactly, and it's amazing just to see how, like, even as a person who, like, I was at SEC Media Days back in July, and I was basically kind of the same energy, hey, he had every single question he was asked by the media.
They had, in my opinion, the most daunting schedule in all the country this year. Like South Carolina, they play Clemson, but it's not a rivalry game for them. It just kind of cropped up on the schedule, and they had them away. So A&M this year, they drew Clemson in the non-conference. They've got LSU and Bama every year. They drew Georgia from the East. And so if you're scoring at home, A&M this year has three teams on the schedule that if the playoffs started today would be in there like swimwear, and a fourth that's right there on the cusp. Again, the nation's most brutal schedule, in my opinion. And they were remotely competitive in a couple of those games, but they lost every one of them. And they did lose to Auburn as well, a game that many people thought was a little bit more neck and neck as far as SEC kind of semi-also-rans. And Auburn is proving that they deserve to be maybe a little bit higher up in the food chain this year. If Bo Nix had one more year of seasoning, say if he was a sophomore this year, that Auburn team would be nothing nice. And they're already proven to be, a thorn in the side of a lot of really good football teams. They lose at Florida, frankly, because Nix just wasn't quite ready. I think they've got a real chance, Auburn, of winning at home against Bama in the Iron Bowl this weekend. But as far as LSU A&M, I'll get you a little bit more from Jimbo Fisher. He was asked in yesterday's presser over in College Station about Joe Burrow. So here's Jimbo on a guy that I'm sure he would love to be coaching.
We review the game and so it, and you see tape of them periodically about people you play during the year, you know what I mean, by tape and what they've done or whatever. But, last year I thought against us he was a great player. He played great that night, running, throwing the football. I'm sure he's much more comfortable in what they do. I guess they've changed some of their scheme schematic. I don't know the inner workings or how they do it or if they've just gotten better at it. I don't know. But I'm sure he's much more comfortable being in Baton Rouge. You can remember, he's a guy who moved all the way across the country from Ohio to Louisiana. and had to make adjustments. You don't take into account how that affects guys. And I'm sure he's more comfortable there. He's better there. They say he's obviously the leader of that team, and you can see it. I mean, I think the guy's playing outstanding football. I think he's playing as good as any quarterback I've seen in a long, long time.
All right, that would be the maroon and white khaki crazy side of the ledger. Talking about Burrow, the way LSU's offense is playing this year, I want to get back to Ed Orgeron and something he said in yesterday's lunch presser that stuck with me a little bit. I'm wondering how much he's going to be able to convince his team of this exact thing. But Orgeron said, this game this year is only about this year against A&M. It's not about last year.
We thought that we won the game 3 or 4 times. We didn't, obviously. But, you know, that's last year, so we got to let that thing go. We got to focus on this year. Last year don't matter. There's different players on this team. There's different players on their team. Just like when we played Alabama, those last 8 games didn't matter. This is about this year, about focusing in on this.
It's just interesting. And sometimes you're in a position like he is, and you're kind of a straight shooter, right, a blunt speaker, which I appreciate. He's completely and utterly transparent. But when you're like that as a head coach, you end up talking out the side of your neck. It's kind of just one of those things you can't avoid. But right after the Arkansas game, he dismisses them and basically says, hey, we remember that A&M game. I'll never forget as long as I live. It's going to be on. And now he's saying this year's about this year. All right, Ed. I ain't hating. And I'll tell you this, Clint. I probably should have saved this for throwing shade, but I'll preempt myself. You know, 40 minutes from now, I'll have to come up with a different topic. It's absolutely ludicrous to me that Coach O felt any reason whatsoever to walk back the comments that he made after the ball game Saturday night about Arkansas, where he basically said, you know, hey, they haven't won a ball game in a while. That's factual. They're really bad. He didn't come out and call them any names. He didn't really disparage them. In 2019, the fact that he felt the need to walk that back, I'm glad he gave it the ole apology and basically said, I'm sorry if I offended anybody. Anytime you start with, I'm sorry if, you ain't sorry. And he shouldn't be in this circumstance. So whoever made him walk that back, bad dog, and shame on you.
That's the big thing. Like, I was saying that yesterday with Jordy about the fact, like, why did he have to apologize for something that was purely factual? It's like, what the hell's going on?
It's 2019, in case you haven't
noticed. I'm starting to realize that.
It's a trend. All right, it's LSU, not PCU. Let me get to a little bit from Billy Napier right now. I told you we'd carve out a little time there. There's a lot at stake, the Cajuns head coach reminds, when ULM comes to town. And not just because of the rivalry, they got a chance to go double-digit dubs in the regular season.
ULM we've had tons of respect for Coach Viator. The caliber of teams that he puts together, certainly very fundamentally sound. I really admire the toughness and effort that they play with on a consistent basis regardless. They're hot. They've won some games here as of late. Certainly a big performance by the quarterback last week. So lots at stake for our team this week.
Just, again, a straight shooter there as well. And this is a guy who, when he looks at his offense, is always, I think, going to be satisfied when the offensive line plays the way that this group has as of late. And he gave an update here, speaking of that O-line, on Kevin Dotson.
Yeah, Kevin's a guy who has tremendous experience. I mean, he's approaching 60 games here or something like that. Guy's played a lot of football. He is a tall, long, powerful human. You know, he can move people. He plays low to high. He's really improved from a fundamental perspective. He's improved from a communication perspective. And he is that consistent guy that you mentioned earlier. You know, his energy, you know, he's a guy that can – he has a pulse on the team. He can affect other people around him. I think that's the biggest thing. He's been a very effective player, you know, I know I like to run it behind him is what I would tell you. So we're proud of Kevin, man, and he's one of these guys that I'm talking about. He's in this group of seniors that we want to see sent out the right way here this Saturday.
Straight up squad goals as we come down the home stretch of 2019 and get toward 2020. One day for someone to call me a powerful human would be fantastic. I love that description there, Billy Napier. describing offensive lineman Kevin Dotson. All right, we're just about halfway home in today's show. Only 2 hours on this Tuesday. Don't forget Tiger Rag Radio from 6 to 8. We got a lot of goods between now and then. Shea Dixon at 5:05. Gordy Rush, our Thursday guy, he's plugging in at 5:45 on this Tuesday due to Thanksgiving. But before we can get to any of that, we got to wind down this hour. And we do that every day with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Bleachers. Clint, I don't think I've told you this yet. I learned today that Blaine Viator and I will have a new experience this Black Friday. We'll have Karen Crow at Warren Easton. We'll be calling the game for Pan American Stadium. We've called that game before, 3 years ago. In the first round, we were in the press box. This time around, we will be in the visiting bleachers. Kind of excited to do a football game right in the midst of a sea of Karen Crow football fans. That should be something on Z105.9. And for today, bleachers, the final word of our 4 o'clock hour. We'll be right back in with more of the good stuff. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now,
let's get started.
We are off and running. Yeah, here we are. Hour 2 of 2 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. For the next hour, we bring you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're going to bring out Shea Dixon in less than 90 seconds. But a quick correction, and it serves as a good reminder as well. When we spoke with our man Eric Mouton, former Raging Cajuns hoopster in the 4 o'clock hour, I asked him about tonight's game between the Lakers and Pelicans. Yeah, about that. It'll be tomorrow night in the Big Blenda. And like Ed Ogeron said on LSU A&M, it'll be on. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Lakers coming to play the Pelicans. That one is tomorrow night. Currently, the Lakers at 15-2. Best record in the West. LeBron James playing great basketball. Statistically, Brandon Ingram just about every bit his equal so far. The former Laker now suiting up for Alvin Gentry and the 6-11 New Orleans Pelicans. So I know basketball probably not at the forefront for you. That's going to be football at this time of year. We got a lot of high school football that's coming your way. Quarters, semis, everybody coming down the home stretch of the high school football playoffs. We'll talk a lot about that as we continue this week. We'll do our best to bring you the latest on the Cajuns and Warhawks, the Saints and the Falcons. But when it comes to some of the best recruiting talk and team talk you'll get anywhere with LSU football, we got to go to our main man, Shea D.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shea Dixon of Go247.
We brought him out and busted him loose. It is time for Shea Dixon, Go247.com. Shea, it's great to have you aboard. Thankful to have you. I'll say that. Don't want to get too corny, but it's Thanksgiving week, and real must recognize real. It's great to have you here.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. I'm thankful for every Tuesday when I get to bless the Acadiana airwaves with my hot takes and beautiful voice. So wouldn't want it any other way, my friend.
You baptize them with your presence, no question. All right, give me the best on the recruiting front that's coming up this weekend. Number one LSU, prohibitive favorites at home in a revenge game, whether we want to bill it that way or not internally, or externally we can. Internally they probably don't. But LSU versus A&M, and this one's going to hold a lot of luster, I think, for big-name recruits. What can you tell our listeners about the prospects and even the commitments that are expected to be in the building?
Yeah, I mean, look, they'll have a good turnout for this game, and it's twofold because, A, obviously being Thanksgiving week, kids are out of school. A lot of them are able to kind of knock out Thanksgiving, at the house with the family and then make it over to Tiger Stadium for a night kickoff. So they'll have a good amount of kids in. The other side of that is that as we get further and further through November and into December, everybody but a few teams, you know, or a few kids are done with their seasons. Playoffs are obviously in the thick of things, and each week more and more kids are able to say, hey, look, next week I don't have a game anymore, and I'm able to spend it, you know, doing whatever, visiting a school, and in this case being at the LSU A&M game. So they'll have a handful of official visitors. I know that they're eyeing guys like Elias Ricks will be in town this weekend with his family. He's their number one cornerback in the country. They're kind of one of their earlier commitments, committed last Christmas, and has spearheaded the class in a way. And they'll have a handful of others on campus from around the Louisiana area into Texas and obviously Mississippi and Georgia. But I'll give you this, by far, I think one of the most important visitors this weekend is a quarterback, and he comes from next year's class, 2021. Name is Caleb Williams, plays at Gonzaga Prep over on the East Coast in the D.C. area, and he's ranked as the number one dual-threat quarterback in the country on 24/7. LSU fans who even casually follow recruiting have probably heard his name. He came to camp this summer, and when he did that, it was a big deal. It was, uh-oh, LSU's got the number one dual-threat quarterback on campus, but certainly he's going to wind up going to staying on the East Coast and going to Clemson. Well, they just signed the number one quarterback in the country, or at least they appear to be in line to sign the number one quarterback in the country for this year's cycle. So he's looking off the East Coast, and Georgia was the team that he was looking at pretty hard before the season. But I think if you look at Georgia and LSU, certainly for a dual-threat quarterback, a guy like Justin Fields just left Georgia because he felt like, A, he wasn't playing above Fromm at the time, but B, he went somewhere, Ohio State, that maybe fit what he does a little bit better. And with LSU running the offense they're running now, Ben, I think that you can make the argument that a dual-threat quarterback would fit better at LSU than in the pro-style offense and attack that the Bulldogs have going under Kirby Smart. So I'm interested to see where that visit goes. He'll get in town. Actually, midweek, he'll be in town and staying all the way through to Sunday. So that's a big-time visitor for them to have on campus over the Thanksgiving break. We'll see what maybe it means once his junior season is completely over and he's into the spring semester and kind of not focused on football but focused on recruiting. But I will say that of the guys they seem to have made a splash with on the offensive side at skill positions because of this big season that they've had and obviously the gaudy numbers they put up, and certainly at the quarterback spot, Caleb Williams is a name to know. He is definitely someone that they are suddenly more in the mix for than probably we could have anticipated 3 months ago.
The life and times of LSU football recruiting detailed by our man Shay D. All right, we're going to do a little no-huddle edition of Flip the Script. I'm going to flip it over to you. I'm interested what you got for me in this Thanksgiving week, Shay.
Yes, absolutely. Look, A&M, LSU, it's, I'll tell you this, man. When we left the press conference a week ago after the Arkansas game, there wasn't much talk about Arkansas from Ed Orgeron or the players. I thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire, fellow Catholic Bear of your old background, Stomping Ground, said kind of summed it up best. He said, look, there hadn't been a game this year where we got into the locker room and nobody cared that we had just won a football game. Everybody said, when can we get on to the A&M film? What do we have to do to get to that game? I know that they're amped about it. And I'll ask you, this is kind of obviously, but more for fun. Have you carried, and I think I have not, more confidence in a game where LSU could lose, right? I don't mean the Northwestern States or Georgia Southerns of the world, but more confidence that LSU is going to win a game against an SEC team that isn't a bad football team, not talking the Arkansas of the world, but just solely based on what happened a year ago?
I think you really have framed this up perfectly. And I said it on my show Monday, Shay, this is the best case scenario for the game that you just described, again, and framed up. It's one where you're playing a team that has a pulse in your conference and you potentially could have a letdown, you know, a mental lapse. You're not as focused, whatever. I mean, even think back to the Darren McFadden game in this type of spot back in 2007. LSU goes to triple overtime and loses to a talented team, But still, Tigers were number one in the country going into that game. They were favored. It can happen on a week like this is the point. But to your better and bigger point, LSU's got something in the gut. No question about it. For this team, for this coach, for that quarterback, and for that entire fan base and program that's coming over from College Station, this is literally the best case scenario that you could ask for a team that's 11-0 and going into a game where they are favored by like 17.5 points. It's the perfect just collision of events. And so I think that this team not only will be on LSU's mind, I think that getting to 21-plus points in the first quarter is on LSU's mind. I think dropping a 70-burger is on LSU's mind. And this defense certainly won't want to become a victim to Kellen Mond for a second straight year. So everything that happened on the field, everything that happened off of it with John Battle, Steve Kragthorpe, local legend here in Acadiana, Kevin Falk, giving them hands. There's no doubt about it. This is the best case scenario. LSU is going to ring Texas A&M's bell. And I think if it hadn't been for the events of last year during and after the game, everything I just said would not be a certainty. We'd all have a little bit more, if not a lot more, doubt going into a game like this.
You know, you brought up an interesting, you touched on a few things. So let's see how I can frame this. But what do you think weighs heaviest, and I guess not on the mind of the players because they don't care about the Jimbo Fisher stuff, but from a total scope, and including the fan base, do you want to win this game so bad because of Jimbo Fisher, because A&M hadn't beaten LSU since they got into the SEC and they won last year, because you fought after the game, or is it because you went to 7 overtimes, or is it, which I'm leaning towards, that you felt like, and I'm not trying to be, you know, refs cheated type of thing, but I think that's kind of how the LSU players feel, is we won that game and they took it away from us time and again, and that's why we're pissed off.
I love this question. So you want me to power rank the reasons why LSU wants to pile drive A&M? This is really good.
Right. Yeah, what's number one, though? I mean,
this is the content that people come for. You spend more time around those players than I do, but I tend to believe the collective of that LSU bubble, and now I am going to lump in the coaching staff, I think that the number one reason is what happened after that game and to Steve Kragthorpe specifically. I think what happened to him and that everything that followed, oh, wait a minute, you're going to disrespect one of our coaches? And look, by the way, when I'm talking about post-game stuff, I'm going to begin with Damian Craig acting an ass coming off the sideline. So from the moment the game ended and Damian Craig did his thing until Kragthorpe and Jimbo's nephew and then everything else I mentioned, John Battle, Kragthorpe, Falk, I honestly believe that those shenanigans that were instigated by A&M punking a man with Parkinson's, a former LSU assistant doing what he did, I think that total just rash of classlessness is the number one thing. Now, it is chased pretty closely. Call it 1B, call it 2, in my mind, with the fact that the game felt taken away from you. In maybe a similar fashion to the way that Saints fans will always feel that the Rams NFC title game was taken away from them. That one came down to one really, really big and blatant missed call. The A&M was a slow drip of things that didn't go your way that probably, in most times and cases, would have gone your way. You know, so I think that that's kind of one, and then 1A. And there are several reasons after that that I could throw in, right? Jimbo Fisher's probably down the line for the players especially. But I'm telling you, I don't think you can underestimate what happened after the game. The fact that one of their own, an assistant coach with Parkinson's, got attacked for the most part. To me, that's got to edge out the fact that you feel you got jobbed on the field. But you're around the kids. Maybe you disagree.
No, maybe I would put that you got jobbed, you know, that the ref influence, I think, is maybe what I would have as 1A, if I'm doing a 1A, 1B scenario. But again, look, I'm flowing off of you. This is good radio here. You mentioned the kids. I've heard a lot of people say this week, don't bring the kids to this game. You don't want them to witness what might be said from the stands, what might be seen on the field. But that's LSU fans, right? Like every game, you're getting Tiger baited, you're getting yelled at, there's animosity. But is there, are we going to witness a heightened level of that because LSU fans already didn't like A&M fans and didn't respect them because they don't like their football team. But because of last year's, what happened is what is happening Saturday night in Tiger Stadium in Death Valley going to be like, you know, if it's usually a 10, is this going to be an 11? You know, of what's going to be said, how liquored up they're going to be, how eager they're going to be to kind of reassert themselves as, you know, the big brother in this relationship.
Say, this one is going to be above and beyond. And I think it's the second time this year in Tiger Stadium where you could say that, and it's not just puffing your chest out to do it. The Florida game this year had a whole lot of animosity, and for a lot of reasons. This one stands a chance to be like that, maybe even more heightened. And so should you bring the kids into the stands? That's a good question. They're certainly going to learn some new words, new combinations of words, and I think the people are going to be awfully fired up. There is only one hope I have along those lines, Shay, and I'll get your take on this too. I hope it doesn't carry over onto the field in a way that gets somebody ejected and possibly suspended for the first half or the entire game in Atlanta. I have a bit of a bad feeling about that because this one's going to be bad blood outside of the stadium, inside of the stadium, and I think there's a chance that it gets very chippy with the players in the pregame, during the game. LSU's got a lot more to play for when the calendar flips over into December and hopefully into January than Texas A&M does. They need to remember that, and I hope the coaching staff puts that out there because you need the emotions. You do want to curb stomp this team. We just laid out the reasons, but you also want to win the SEC championship and beyond. So those are my two cents.
You know, I think I kind of have a more neutral feeling on what happens on the field, and I'll put it two ways. A, I think that if LSU comes out, if it's not a close game, if LSU jumps on them, they're up. And sometimes that's when stuff happens, right? Then you're like out there, you know, who cares? We're winning by 20-something or we're losing by 20-something. I'll take a swing on somebody. I don't think that any of that's going to happen. I think that LSU's going to be focused. I think they'll know what you know is we've got bigger things to play for. I want to play in Atlanta. I don't want to be sitting on the bench for the first half. So I'm not doing anything that's overly stupid. B, I think that, and I'm not trying to slight A&M, and I honestly think they're in a bit of a transition period here, but they knew this wasn't their year. They had to play Bama. They had to play Georgia. They had to play Clemson. They had to play LSU. They had to play Auburn. Much like LSU, they're playing all these top 10 teams. Well, the opposite of LSU, they're 0-4 so far. They haven't won one of them, and the push game could have been Auburn, and they didn't win that either. So I kind of think that A&M comes into this game thinking, well, we're probably, you know, do I think we're going to win? No. And these guys are probably going to be out for some blood. And because of that, I'm not coming in there chest out, you know, from the snap swinging on folks. So I think A&M's going to try to just stay focused, stick in the game, and LSU obviously so much to play for. And because of that, I think on the field, we'll see if I'm proven wrong, but I think everything stays pretty clean. I don't know about the fans, but I do think that on the field, we'll see things stay pretty clean.
I hope that is the case. You and I on Thanksgiving, look, we're just doing our best to keep it civil. I know that all of us are going to be full all weekend long, and we'll get our fill Saturday night in Death Valley. Shay, happy Thanksgiving to you, Emily, and the family. You know, we appreciate you, brother. All of us in Acadiana do.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on. I hope everybody over there in the Acadiana area has a great week and enjoys the game on Saturday. 12-0 is within reach, Benjamin.
There he goes, Shay Dixon. The man comes in and blows up our spot, and now I need to go quickly to a break. We'll be back in. I want to get your reaction, especially maybe those power rankings, right? You could call them power rankings of hate, reasons, ranked, why LSU will want some blood in this game against Texas A&M. Of course, we're getting you closer to Tiger Rag Radio at 6 o'clock. Between now and then, I'll also bring aboard Gordy Rush. It's a big-time program on this Thanksgiving week Tuesday. Stick around. After this brief timeout, we got more of the good stuff. Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
It can change a little bit of what you're wanting to do maybe with your plan. You know, the next guy up has got to be ready to play. PJ's played some outside then, and you know, you got to decide how you want to play certain coverages with certain receivers. That's the biggest thing that jumps out.
Sean Payton, how does it change a game plan when you're without your best cornerback? Marshawn Lattimore has missed the last two at Tampa, home versus Carolina. And I think the writing on the wall at this point, short turnaround on the road, not sure it looks good. Now that Lattimore is going to be available to go against Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons Thursday night in Atlanta. A short segment as we come back in. Look, anytime Shea Dixon wants to go deep, a little longer than his usual, I'm not going to stand in the way of that. But I will go briefly. Some thoughts on Saints-Falcons. It's not quite the same as thinking about the college level. It's not even in the same hemisphere as LSU A&M when it comes to payback. But I do have to imagine that the game a few weeks ago inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome is weighing on the mind of this New Orleans Saints team. It was not the first game back with Drew. That was the Cardinals game. But they came off a bye week. I mean, the world was their oyster, and then they absolutely let down and wet the bed. And the unit, to me, that was at its worst, I mean, like at a season low point, was the offensive line. Breeze was sacked, if memory serves, six times, was hit maybe 10 more times during the ball game. That just can't be. And this O-line has come together without Andres Pete. You've seen them do it, again, with a bit of a makeshift look. They've been able to get by for a while. Heck, they got by without Teron Armstead for a while in that Panthers game as well. And I think it's the O-line that's going to have to take steps forward the most from last time to this time, going against the Dirty Birds. As for playing without Lattimore, as you just heard Payton suggest there, sure. Anytime you could have Julio, Calvin Ridley, I don't know that they're going to have the tight end. He's been injured, and for that matter, Julio's been dinged up. But Austin Hooper, really good receiving tight end, has been injured. I don't know how many of those Falcons' weapons on offense are going to be available, but you'd love to have all hands on deck, especially with a short turnaround and especially given what happened last time that you played this team and you didn't even score in double digits. And so, look, the Saints played Thanksgiving night at home against the Falcons last year, and that was a game that turned into a really good affair for New Orleans. I don't know how this one's going to be on the road, but my guess is the Saints have enough left over in the tank. I think that they know they've got every opportunity to enter that 49ers game with only two losses, and then if you beat San Fran, boom, you're in the driver's seat. Number one seed in the NFC. So there's still a lot at stake, even if the Falcons overall don't appear to be all that great. Now they're 3-8, right? They were 1-7. Now they're 3-8. Don't think they're going to look all that good on paper, but you're going to have to respect them on film, especially after what they did to you less than a month ago. All right, I told you. Short segment. One of the few times, Clint, that we've had a world's shortest segment audition in the middle of an hour. But we get by because that's just what we do. When we return, time to throw some shade because I'm addicted. I like doing it. And then Gordy Rush coming aboard. Typically, we slot him in on Thursdays with Thanksgiving coming on a Thursday this week. And, you know, every year in November, Gordy's going to come aboard at 5:45. That's all leading us into Tiger Ag Radio 6 to 8. So stick with us. After a timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Perfect time for me to remind everyone what tone deaf truly sounds like. And no, we're not about to play some heinous sounds and hurt your eardrums. We're classier than that. Not by a lot, but we are. And this to me is pretty incredible. Sham Sharania, one of the best reporters these days covering the association, that would be the NBA for you, and he now works Sherania for the Stadium TV. He sat down with Anthony Davis. All of this is in advance of tomorrow night's game, Lakers at the Pels. And AD was asked by Shams Charania if he would have done anything differently about last year, anything whatsoever. Before I throw shade, here's the response from Anthony Davis.
No. I probably would never flick the fan off. but it was just like a thing in the moment, man. You know, like you hear, you just think about like all the stuff you gave to the city and how much good you've done for the city. And, you know, once you feel like you need to move on, obviously, you know, it's going to be friction from the fans, the organization, like, which is natural. That's what's supposed to happen. No one wants to see their guy leave. But it was just like last game, couple games left, and it was just like, it just kept going. It was just like, hey, man, we 3 weeks passed, it's a month passed, and it just never stopped. And it was just like, it was weighing on me a little bit, like, man, like, should I wait until the end of the season or like whatever? But, you know, and the fans just hit me with something. It was just like, it was just all that emotion bottled up in one. It just happened, you know? So that's one thing I do regret about, you know, flicking a fan off.
Thank you, Anthony, for the ammunition. So take that sound, keep it in your memory banks for about 40 seconds here while I remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Yes, they've got the standing seam metal awnings. They've got the retractable shades and screens. There's so much they could do to beautify life outside of your home to give you the best patio game on the block. But the reality for me is this. The best part of the value with Patio Center, the people there. It's Mark and Company. They're going to sit down with you, formulate that vision, and then they're going to fulfill it. And it is going to be living out a dream in your backyard. All of that becomes a reality when you go to patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
It pains me as a millennial to have to say this, but that response, that line of thinking, that garbage that just spewed from Anthony Davis's mouth, it's the most millennial thing I've ever heard, and it gives hardworking millennials, yeah, like yours truly, a really bad name. He was asked if he regretted anything, and he basically said, and I'll paraphrase at the beginning, no, it's just kind of, you know, a thing that happened. It was just kind of an experience. And he comes down the stretch and says, and I'll paraphrase again, well, it kept going on. I mean, hey, this thing was 3 or 4 weeks later. Why is this still happening to me? Dude, you and your representation did this. And I know a case could be made that you gave a heads up to the Pels so that they could get the most possible for you instead of getting burnt by not knowing in advance. I know that that's one side of this. But have enough wherewithal and worldliness to at least understand the other side of it. You didn't just give that fan the middle finger. You and your representation at Clutch Sports Management gave the organization and the city the middle finger. And then you had the gall to wear a That's All Folks t-shirt and pass it off as, well, I didn't pick it out. Somebody else dresses me. Grow the hell up, Anthony Davis. It's okay that you wanted to leave. That's fine. That's the modern NBA. But acting as if you're offended by the response, that is the definition of tone deaf. And that response was the personification of the entitled, just kind of living the experience. I don't really know how this happened. I don't know why this is happening to me. The world is happening to me. Millennial crap that I've ever heard. So Anthony Davis, you deserve whatever comes your way. Tomorrow night, I'm sure you'll rest on tens of millions and be just fine about it. But you got to do better than that response.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
He just has no idea how that could have rubbed anybody the wrong way. I am just flabbergasted. Even the guy you're playing with, LeBron, admitted that the decision was a bad idea. You can walk things back in your life. It is okay. It doesn't make you any less of a tough guy. I guess I shouldn't be shocked by that response, but wow. When I heard that earlier today, I said, yep, I know exactly what I'll be doing at about 5:33 p.m. And so now the deed is done. And so too is this segment. We've had a lot of fun today. We're going to keep that theme going. Eric Mouton, Shea Dixon have hopped aboard. Gordy Rush is coming next. His take on LSU, A&M, and the Tigers getting ready for bigger and better things in December and January. Stick with us. We got a brief timeout and then more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. Time to put a bow on your 5 o'clock hour. Of course, we're getting closer and closer to Tiger Rag Radio, 6 to 8 p.m. on 103.7 The Game, but we'll preempt Jeff Palermo and company with one of our favorites. He'll take Thursday off, as will we, for Thanksgiving. We've got him on a Tuesday, and we've got him aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter, is with us. Gordy, thankful to have you here, brother. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Ben. Thanks for having me. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, so what was the game against Arkansas like? I know it was a game where LSU really just kind of had to survive in advance, and after the game, all the talk seemed to be about A&M. What was it like from your vantage point?
Yeah, you know, I think mission accomplished. I thought, you know, offensively, Arkansas played with a little energy. They were coming off of an open week. You know, they stopped, I think, LSU once or twice in the first half, and then, you know, Joe Burrow and company got on track, and they did what they pleased. Defensively, I was really pleased that Arkansas came out with a couple wrinkles, but LSU expected Arkansas to do something similar to what Ole Miss. They did, and LSU made some really nice adjustments in terms of handling, you know, all that double and triple option sort of football. And so I thought the defense played well and cleaned up a lot of the mistakes they made in the second half up in Oxford 2 weeks ago.
We can look at the, SEC Freshman of the Week honor for Maurice Hampton and decide that, okay, he had a good week. But when you watch film, did it play out that way for you as well?
No, no doubt. I think it's the best free safety play that I've seen this year out of LSU. And keep in mind, you've had me on all season. I've been beating the drum that I think both Delpit and Stevens are more comfortable in a nickelback or in a strong safety type role around the line of scrimmage. Hampton did a fantastic job in center field. I thought his run responsibilities, and when you play free safety, that you're called an alley player, you work inside out. I thought it was spot on. I think for a young guy, he really played a good game. Granted, they were playing Arkansas, but he really did play well.
Hey, as prolific Gordy as he's expected to be for pulmonary in center field, can you keep him as a dual sport athlete in this program?
It's tough, and I shut it down after football, so I don't know what he could do on the baseball field. But, yeah, it's difficult, but it's definitely possible. And, you know, I actually talked to Paul Maneri in the first quarter about that. He was down on the sideline and said that he's had many of them. You know, he's had stuff, but he's had Chad Jones, he's had Jared Mitchell, so he's had people that have been able to do both.
Talking LSU football with Gordy Rush. It's a Thanksgiving Tuesday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, rolling on 103.7 The Game. I mean, just how much is in the tank for this A&M ball game, given what happened last year, and how do you maybe throttle that back to make sure they don't get a little too amped up? There's still a lot to play for once they get to December and January.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point. And I think when, you know, being on the field for that game and experiencing everything surrounding the Texas A&M game, already hearing what's come out of people's mouths, right? I think that's a concern. Are you over-amped up for this thing? And do you leave too much on the field here and don't bring it? I doubt they're not going to be up to play the SEC championship. But look, I think it is worth having the conversation. You know, it's a great spot for LSU. It's at home. LSU's coming off the Arkansas game. And there's so many pivotal people that are a part of this team that remember last year, right?
A&M, on the other hand, is coming off a Georgia, physical Georgia game in the rain, in Athens, now have four losses, right? And when you look at they return three people on defense, six on offense, not as many got pivotal players, right, win that game. Most were on the sideline or in some cases, somewhere even in College Station because they're playing some young people. So you got to like the spot if you're LSU. Are you able to tunnel all that emotion and what have you and make sure that it's on the football field and no extracurriculars?
If you're Dave Aranda, Gordy, how do you look at this guy, Kellen Mond? Obviously, you had him last year in College Station. How do you view him, the threat he poses, and how you defense him?
Well, I'll tell you, he's playing much better than he was earlier in the season when you look at him on film, and they've evolved. And credit Jimbo Fisher. I think early on they struggled to run the football. And then they inserted Isaiah Spiller, a true freshman, a tailback who's really been good. They've got a big second back to run with him in Richardson, who's a transfer from Central Florida, 6'2", 245. They run a lot of some different looks, and also they put in the back half of the season split backs, and they'll run some triple option things. And so I look for them to look at that Ole Miss tape and probably insert some of that, and they're going to try to run the football and do the play-action pass, and Kellen Mond is so effective, especially with his pass sprints and what have you, and do what A&M has been able to do well this season offensively, and that's keep the football. A&M is first in time of possession in the SEC with 33 minutes. The best way to defend Joe Burrow is have him sitting on the bench.
When you look at this LSU offense, how do you grade out where the offensive line is right now in terms of health, the way they're performing, everything?
Oh, they've been fantastic. You know, you expect Sidney Charles to be back, and you got that. Austin Deculus has had the opportunity to rest for 2 weeks. Has he come back to his position? Eddie Ingram has stepped in and played well. Traore has played fantastic at right tackle. Adrian McGee jumped out the left tackle. You got to be really excited about all of the above. And Deculus has practiced this week, so he's a go. So A-plus. I mean, I think this offensive line, they've been outstanding, and they're going to play a Texas A&M defensive front that returns one of their front seven from a year ago.
All right, tell me if I'm crazy. I've been pushing my theory off on everybody that comes aboard, including our mutual friend Ruffin Rodriguez. No question about it, Joe Burrow, Heisman Trophy winner. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, SEC Offensive Player of the Year. It's possible for both of those things to be true, right?
Possible. I mean, you got to imagine that. I've got to imagine that Burrow, is the SEC Offensive Player of the Year, but it is possible. I think no question he's in the discussion.
Well, what would you make out of this SEC run so far for Edwards-Helaire? It's been more than I could have imagined.
No, he's been fantastic. You know, I spoke about this at lunch. Somebody asked me, and I think the Sports Illustrated article said, look, last year, they only asked Joe Burrow to play Uno. Now he's actually playing chess. I think the same thing for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's benefited being in this offense, Ben. And what it's been able to do is, one, it's opened up the field for him. No longer has he been running in the phone booth with two tight ends and an H-back. Secondly, high football IQ. They've used him as a receiver. They've moved him around. They've gotten him in successful matchups. He's done. Nobody's talking about all the picks that he's been able to throw to free up Jamar Chase. Like the go-ahead or the touchdown against Florida that iced it, right? Nobody's talking about the use of him in motion and then catching that flood route at the end of the first half against Alabama. If Joe Burrow should win the Offensive Player of the Year, to me, Clyde Edwards would be number two.
That's fair. Gordy, before we get you out of here, your overall thoughts on, I guess, everybody outside of the current top four in the college football playoff rankings. Utah from the Pac-12, Oklahoma from the Big 12, and then there's Alabama. What do you think about that grouping and who might be next up if LSU beats Georgia?
Well, let's start with Alabama. I mean, that's the hot topic. And here's the thing about Alabama. Obviously, they got to play Auburn. But I think that there's some Alabama fatigue that's out there. And so I think a lot of people, and I'm sure the human emotions are some of it, that are on that committee want to see somebody other than Alabama. Okay. Their strength of schedule is not strong. And then they don't have Tua. And that factors in. And so I think that all the three work against Alabama. Not that I'm an LSU sideline guy that doesn't want to see Alabama, whoever's the best team, they put it in there. I think the concern, you've got Utah right now who has a loss, an 8-4 USC team that controls their own destiny. If they beat Oregon, to me, I think they're the favorite at this point. And then you have Oklahoma, who's going to have, they've got Bedlam against Oklahoma State. Then I believe they've got Baylor getting the Big 12 championship. And so if Oklahoma, you know, wins out, then to me, they're kind of number two behind Utah, the way that this thing is set up. And, you know, I think that those two go ahead of Alabama, in my opinion. And then you ask yourself this question. What happens if Baylor beats Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship? Do you take Baylor? Do you take Alabama with all the above? And I know where the rankings are, but would the rankings change? And so I think it's a really interesting, it's an interesting time. I think that, you know, if all the scenarios play out, to me, Utah is kind of the leader at this point. And then I'm almost a big believer if LSU beats A&M and happens to lose to Georgia, I think LSU's in, and the rest of that discussion goes by the wayside. It becomes Georgia, LSU, Clemson, Ohio State.
I see it the same way. If somehow Georgia upsets LSU, it would be a large upset, though. Gordy, it's great having you here, my man. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Thanks for doing this on a Tuesday. Hey.
No, anytime. Thanks, Ben.
And that's the way we finish the program in style. How about that? Not bad at all for a Tuesday. Caught up with our man Eric Mouton in the 4 o'clock hour, and you just got your fill sandwiched in this 5 o'clock hour of the LSU A&M game. Some recruiting, some of what Shea and I do. Of course, I'm talking about Shea Dixon. Go247.com was with us at 5, and then Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter, puts it on a tee as we get out of here on this Tuesday. So thanks to everybody that came aboard. We'll have a special show tomorrow. We'll take off Thursday and enjoy Thanksgiving, as will you. And then Friday, we're back. A Black Friday best of B2BS edition. We're going to run back some of my favorites. Football and baseball season. We're going to have Jeff Bagwell, Andrew Stevenson, a great Raging Cajuns recruiting update from Billy Embody, Tommy Moffitt. Trust me, there's going to be a lot packed into that program. And then, of course, Friday from 6 to 6:30, football night in Acadiana. The pregame edition gets you ready for quarters and semis action in the Louisiana High School Football Playoffs. It's going to be lit. It's been a great week, and we're not stopping here. Thanks to our guest, you, for listening, calling, and then interacting on social media, and of course, the famous Clint D. For all of you, my name is Ben Love, and this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, Tiger Rag Radio, coming up next from 6 to 8 on 103.7 The Game.